Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Don Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So, Melanie, in the past week, we've had a number of big things happen, big and small, big in our little world.
Right. Relatively big.
Relatively big for us. They impacted us. So I should mention, I don't think we've mentioned before, one of our plans with our tax returns coming in, I got our taxes done right away. In fact, I had them.
Yes, you did.
I had them filed before the filing window opened. They had to wait.
It was quite impressive.
Yes. I was like, in previous years, I mean, our taxes are not that complicated, and I just always use Intuit, you know, quick tax, whatever. What is it called? Intuit. Whatever the online tax thing is.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The yeah.
I don't know anything about taxes.
I know. I do always, I take care of all the taxes. But I just, in my head, it's Mac and Tax. That was the original tax software package I used in like in 1997. I've always done electronic taxes. Anyway, I got the taxes in. Usually I don't get them until, you know, I wait. I usually don't wait till April, unless I'm afraid we have to pay something. But I usually, it's like late March or even mid-March. But this year, boom, end of January, as soon as I got all of the paperwork that we needed, I got it done. So that meant tax return was coming, and we decided to use some of the tax return to buy a new freezer.
Yes.
And because we have a chest freezer, or had, but we decided it wasn't working for us.
It was okay. It just wasn't really enough for what we needed.
Right. Yeah, it was about 9 cubic feet. It was actually less than that. It's probably because it had that big hump in the shelf inside where the compressors and all the equipment is. But it was like 3 by 3 by 3. And so it was small. We got it for free from my brother.
Right.
When we moved in here. And so it's at least a dozen years old and probably more like 20 years old. And it worked. Like you said, I just hit your coffee cup. It works, but.
Well, the fact is that the whole idea of the chest freezer was to be able to buy in bulk, like bulk right. meats when they were on sale, so that we wouldn't have to be constantly like buying what we needed each week at whatever grocery store price was.
Yes.
But it was so full of stuff that we could really only fit in like one grocery shopping trip's worth of extra food.
And part of the thing is because we've figured all these ways to save by storing things. So there's bags of bones, there's homemade stock, there's bread for turning into breadcrumbs and all this stuff going in there. But what would happen is because it's a deep freezer, it's a chest freezer, we'd end up using, like, you don't want to dig to the bottom of the thing to look for something. You know, you get your whole upper torso in there and your legs are sticking out like a cartoon trying to dig for stuff.
Uh-huh.
Well, for some of us who are not as tall as others of us, that's what it would look like. And so we end up using the top top foot of the freezer anyway. So you get this tiny freezer. And so the upside is a chest freezer is extremely energy efficient because cold air is heavier than warm air. So when you open the door, the cold air just sits there, you know, because it lifts up. Whereas when you open up a stand-up freezer, all the air falls up. Okay. But that wasn't enough reason to keep this freezer. So we decided to get a stand-up freezer. And we picked out I did some research, picked out the model for the best one out there. I used the wire cutter and a couple other sites. And they all agreed that this was the one, which is a Frigidaire, I think. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's about 17 cubic feet. So it's a nice big freezer. It's like twice the size of the old one. And because it's vertical, we can fit everything. So excited. So we put in the order We decided to use Lowe's this time instead of Home Depot because the last two times we've ordered an appliance from Home Depot, it was a major pain in the neck, the whole delivery process, the lack of communication, the errors. It was just terrible. So we went with Lowe's, and Lowe's was so much better.
Like, so much better.
Yeah, we ordered it, and they would be like, in 2 days. Well, I'm kind of skipping ahead because there's a part of the story that I have to kind of go back to, which is where the freezer goes, there's a shelf above it that has all of the, like, a bunch of spices and other sorts of cooking stuff.
Not spices, condiments.
Condiments, right. Oils, vinegars, there's some spices, soy sauce, all that sort of stuff. And because we don't have a lot of storage space. So that's where it was. And so that would have to come out because the freezer would be there. So I was planning on that. Well, what was it, last Monday? We're sitting in the office. The soup for dinner was simmering on the stove. We're about to get up and go set the table. And we heard a terrific crash.
Right.
And we went running right outside the door to the office and went running. And there it was. The shelf full of all these condiments had fallen off the wall. Like, all of these bottles and other containers, baking soda and cornstarch. And
no, it really was the
worst, the main part. Most of it was okay.
Right. Because our pantry / laundry room is carpeted, most of these glass bottles fell onto the carpet. So there was very little breakage, thank God.
Yes.
Unfortunately,
What did break
was this bottle of orange blossom syrup. And so it was sticky.
Which was about older than most of our children.
No.
It seems like it's okay. But yeah, it doesn't really matter to the story.
It was purchased when my sister's. I don't think it was that
she
old.
She left it behind just, when she moved out.
When she moved out.
Yeah. So that broke, as well as a glass bottle. I don't know why they sell it in glass bottles. So furikake, which is a Japanese seaweed and sesame seed condiment. Like, you shake it onto like a rice bowl or something like that. And so seaweed that's now all soaked in orange blossom syrup, and both of them mixed and smelling and soaking into the carpet, and, you know, picking up all the broken glass and picking up all the bottles and all the mess took time, and it just sat there soaking and soaking. So, and it could have been worse because the black vinegar didn't break. The fish sauce didn't break.
If the fish sauce had broken, I think we would have had to rent a hotel room for a week or something.
We would
I
have had
know.
To move out, burn the house down. Yeah, that would have been really bad. So that was bad enough. It smelled. And since we are a fragrance free household because of your allergies, we're more sensitive to perfumey smells as it is. So we had to clean it up. You know, get this off out of the carpet, this sticky mess. So I said, hey, guess what? We have carpet cleaner spray under the sink.
Bad idea.
Bad idea. It made it worse. I think you just layered
another smell on top of a smell.
In fact, I think what it did was it made it 100 times worse. Like, if I just left the orange blossom and furikake mix on there, it would have gone away overnight or whatever. We would have sopped it up or whatever. It was so, like, It even now, a week later, there's a faint hint of this perfume in there when you walk through. It just was so sickly sweet. It was awful. So then we figured out, let's put baking soda on it. Baking powder or baking soda?
Baking soda.
Baking soda. I can never keep those two straight. I have to look at the box to put when the recipe says. I have to make sure I'm using the right one. Baking soda, you know, Arm & Hammer on it to absorb the odor. We did like three or four applications of baking soda.
Vacuum it up.
That was almost a mistake, the vacuuming it up.
Well,
it clogged up the vacuum cleaner.
It clogged the vacuum cleaner and it.
Then I had to clean the vacuum cleaner.
And the vacuum cleaner kind of is now smelling like
baking soda baking and soda. Orange blossom syrup and Resolve carpet cleaner. So, long story short, if that shelf that had stayed on the wall for nearly 12 years and 3 days before I was going to take it off the wall, it collapsed. I mean, what are the odds? The timing, as Jeff Miller, our friend, said online, I guess its shelf life had expired. Uh-huh. I had to laugh at that one. So I patched the holes in the wall, and before the guys came and delivered the freezer, and the new freezer's there, and it's awesome. Like, I know I'm an old person by how excited I am to have this awesome new freezer. It's pathetic how excited I am to have this freezer.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm not going to argue with that too much.
Unlimited ice trays. We can put, like I can go to the butcher and buy a whole bunch of meat this summer, like for grilling and stuff. It's going to be awesome. Like, you were excited that we could buy frozen pizzas, put them in there.
You know, there have been times when I was really tempted to buy a bunch of frozen pizzas for an easy dinner.
Right.
But then I thought, I don't have freezer space for them. So what would I do with them when I got them home?
Sometimes you want to put a half sheet pan in the freezer for, you know, whether you like, what are the cookie things? The frozen.
Yeah. The lava rocks.
Lava rocks. You know, that sort of thing. And you'd have to kind of perch it on top and then close the top of the chest freezer and hope it didn't squish it. Nope, not anymore. No, it just goes right in. Oh, so excited. So, new freezer, happy, happy. Good purchase.
Kind of ridiculously happy, yes.
Yes. Every time I go out there and I see the little green light underneath, it's got a little green light that's like an on light, you know, that says, I'm working. I know you are, buddy. Maybe I should give it a droid name.
No.
R5 freeze 4, something like that. Never mind. So the other thing that happened this week was Lucy had her final allergy tasting challenge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which was
corn.
Corn. And she passed. No corn allergy, which means no, all of her food allergies, apart from perhaps hazelnut, but we're not sure about that. We're not going to spend $250 to test that.
No, she had Nutella this week. She was fine.
So she's probably completely allergy free. Hallelujah. What a day. In fact, and the funny thing is all of us, the rest of us, except for Lucy, are all like just continuing to be excited by all the things. Oh, Lucy, you can have this and Lucy can have this. I think she's kind of getting sick of it.
She's tired of us talking about it. She's not tired of trying new things. She's tired of us getting excited about her trying new things.
Yeah. She's a little like the center of attention a little more than she would like. So, but we would like every time we encounter like recipes, we're like, oh, we can make that now. Or mm-hmm. I no longer need this gluten-free pancake recipe for these barely edible pancakes. Let's be honest.
Right.
Those were not. I mean. I put on a happy face for her, but they were not great pancakes.
They were not good.
Not compared, no. Like they were leaden even discs.
No, they were horrible.
She did not want them.
She was not pleased. So this week we, in honor of her allergy food challenge, we had enchiladas last night for dinner, which she loved.
Although she didn't eat the corn tortillas.
No, she ate the first one.
Okay.
By the second one, she was like, okay, I'm ready to. She dissected it and just ate the inside part and left the tortilla behind. But, you know, she ate a whole one first.
Yeah, she did. She did. She enjoyed it.
And then she and I had the leftovers for lunch today. So.
And you had popcorn this week?
She insisted on Friday afternoon snack was popcorn at her request, which she said was okay. And I think it's probably a texture issue because, you know, popcorn is kind of like weird texture wise.
Yes.
I have texture issues with popcorn.
Well, I think everyone else has always been so excited by popcorn. She was dying to find out like what was the big deal. So she tried it. I think over time it'll get better. What we're really, of course, as we've said before, what we're really excited for is that she can now go receive her first communion without any problems, without any special accommodations for allergy, etc. And the other thing is that we discovered, and we'll talk about this in a second, is with Scouts, we don't have to worry about special accommodations when she's at scouting events and she's, you know, camping and they have to bring special foods and all that sort of stuff. All the other Scout parents have been so accommodating, so willing to go the extra mile to be helpful for her,
but
to make sure she's welcome.
Logistically difficult for right. us as well as for them.
Right. And we don't have to worry about that. So excited. And so I appreciate everyone's patience with us talking about this every week, but we're really excited. And I'm also excited not because literally it was $250 every time she went to the allergist for this tasting challenges. And that's done. So speaking of Scouts, you took Lucy to her den meeting today.
Yeah, they had like a little mini Klondike Derby.
Which we've talked about before for the older kids.
Yes. Yeah. So it was fun. So they started off with fire making, you know, making fire in a fire pit and talking about fire safety rules.
8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So they helped, but they were doing like sort of the helping role as opposed to the actual
flicking matches into burning stuff.
Right. Yeah. But they had, you know, they enjoyed that. And then let's see, what else did they do? They did orienteering. So looking at a map and then figuring out how to place the compass, you know, find north on the compass and talking about, you know, North Star and that sort of thing. And then sort of how to put the compass on the map so that you can align the map with where you actually are in space. And they will come back to that over and over again the next few years. So this was just sort of the introduction to orienteering. Then they did a ice rescue challenge where they had one kid sit on a sled and pretended like the sled had slid out onto the ice, which was thin. And so the other kids had to take turns throwing a rope and pulling him in. Which was cute.
It would have been easier if there was still snow on the ground.
Yeah, they ended up having one because they're all pretty small. They had one kid actually pushing the sled from behind while the others pulled on the rope.
I wish I could have seen that. That would have been so cute.
It was really cute. And then they did throwing a rope over a branch to hang up your bear bag.
If you're not familiar with camping, if you're anywhere near where there are bears in the wild, if you have food, you secure it in a bag or other kind of container, and then hang it in a tree so that the bears can't get it until the bears figure out how to untie ropes.
Right. That was cute. Lucy did not get it over the branch, but she made a valiant effort, and she did throw it fairly far for her size. That's good. I think only one of the children actually threw the rope all the way over the
branch. Probably one of the bigger boys.
Yeah, I mean, that was just like, I think height was as much of a factor. And then let's see, they did a first aid thing where they got to splint legs. And
nice.
With the caveat, if you find somebody who's actually got a broken limb, what you really should be doing is calling 911 at your age, not splinting their limb. Right. But again, these are skills which we will come back to in future years, but you build
on the initial, right.
Like not mastery, but what do you call it when you do a spiral?
Okay.
Yeah. Like in math, like you spiral around, like you introduce a topic and then you come back to it next year and then you come back to it the year before.
In fact, a lot of school subjects like that, you know, history, all that sort of stuff is you do American history in like second grade and you come back to it in seventh grade and you come back to it in 10th grade. 11th grade.
But they had fun. And then at the end, they got to use their fire to roast marshmallows and make s'mores.
And that was the first time Lucy ever had s'mores.
Well,
she had Lucy s'mores.
She's had like actual roasted marshmallows and chocolate and on gluten-free graham crackers. So she's had the idea of s'mores before.
Okay.
But this was the first time she's had, like, just...
Regular old... Hershey milk chocolate, regular graham cracker, regular marshmallow.
Right.
Cornstarch marshmallows.
Yeah. She ate three. She liked them.
Wow. Daintily, I might add, as I saw in the pictures.
She was very dainty. Unlike most of the boys who were there,
whose hands became encased in marshmallow.
Yeah, they were kind of messy.
Were there any of them swinging around their flaming marshmallows?
No.
I think I know one boy who I would suspect doing that.
We were informed, in fact, that the reason why the marshmallows happen at the end after the official end of the meeting is because there was a rule instituted at some point that they were not allowed to have flaming marshmallows at scout meetings. And so officially the meeting was over. And then after that point, we were simply hanging out and cooking our own marshmallows that we happened to have brought in the fire, but it was no longer a den meeting.
In the fingers in the air quotes for all of those words. Yeah. So the one I suspect who would have been the one flinging his flaming marshmallow around, the reason I suspect that is because his brother did it in my den. So at one point, and may have been the cause of the rule.
Actually, I think the cause of the rule was a female child of a scout
leader.
Leader.
Oh, I think I know which one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so anyway, that's good.
I had fun. I haven't been to a den meeting with Lucy in quite some time. I was kind of shocked at how tall some of the kids had got. Like,
yeah,
what happened?
They keep growing.
Has it really been that long since I've seen you guys in person?
I mean, it's been more than a year. Like, you, because the really? Last time you saw those kids in person would have probably been the Pinewood Derby, which was the last all pack event we had before.
Didn't we go on a hike with some of them, or was that?
We went on a hike with, you mean with Lucy and some of them?
I remember going on a hike with the
Well,
at Ponkapog Pond, we were all wearing masks, so it was definitely middle of the pandemic.
Right.
And some of Lucy's, Lucy's den must have been there. Cause yeah.
Was that when Makiba got lost, or was that a different?
No, that was the girl's hike.
Makiba's one of the moms. She got lost on the hike.
So it hasn't been a full year.
No, that's true. That was another one where I wasn't there.
Yeah.
I was probably recording. I don't know. That was in the summer. Yes. At Ponkapog. Yeah. So, but you know, 6 months, even these kids are
right
growing. Sophie's passing me.
Yeah.
Sophie is now, Bella has been taller than me for a bit. Sophie is now passing me on the height.
Sophie got new
pulling
boots
up the rear.
Sophie got new boots this week, and in the new boots, she's definitely taller than you.
Yeah. She's not allowed to wear the new boots while standing next to me. That's just the rule. New rule. So while you had Lucy at the den meeting, I was taking the rest of the gang to visit my mom, who lives with my brother. I haven't seen her in a while, and she's got her vaccine, so it was safe for us to go and visit her. And so we went over, and we stopped at McDonald's on the way over, and I did the ordering on the app for all of us. It was like going straight from mass home change go. And it wasn't time to eat lunch, so we got lunch on the go. And as usual, they screwed up the order. What is so hard about getting 5 meals correct? I don't understand. But anyway, Ben got a Happy Meal. He didn't have to. Yeah, I told him he didn't have to, but he likes getting the Happy Meal. He doesn't eat that much anyway. But there was a toy in it, and we were talking about how bad the toy was. And we started singing the song there was a song made for an Australian mass transit agency that was playfully warning people to stay away from the tracks for the trains. And it was called Dumb Ways to Die. And it went viral on the internet years ago, like 5 or 6 or 7 years ago or something like that. Maybe 5 years ago, because the kids all remember it. And it's called Dumb Ways to Die. And so we adapted it to Dumb Toys We Buy. And we had fun making up the lyrics, you know, rhyming lyrics for the different dumb toys that they have, like angel bears without bodies. Remember the angel bear head?
They frequently find the Happy Meal toys more to laugh at than things that are longed for.
Yeah, I'm going to link the Dumb Ways to Die video in the show notes.
Okay.
Because you got to see it if you haven't seen it. But the tune was funny. Dumb toys to buy. So many dumb toys we buy. Dumb toys we buy. So many dumb toys we buy. And then, you know, angel bear without a body and only a head. You leave it in your room at night and you will be dead. We're just like dumb lyrics over and over. And we were singing it the whole way there, all together, all of us. And as dumb as it is, it's so much fun that they get into these things all together and laughing together and having fun together. That's the best part. I mean, it's a dumb song, but it's a lot of fun. So we went to my mom's to visit my mom, and my sister. So my brother and his wife went out with their kids, and we were just there alone with my mom. And my other sister-in-law stopped by to drop something off, and she happened to have my dad with her. So we didn't expect to see him, but he came in and hung out with us too. And so I told her I'd drive him home afterward. So it was really nice. We got to spend the afternoon, the day with my mom and my dad, which we don't get to do very often these days. And, you know, my dad's 88, my mom's 80 something. I won't be more specific than that, but because I, off the top of my head, I think she's like 84 something. But, you know, every moment is precious with them. You know, every chance we get to see them is precious. So good to see them. And Mike, of course, my dad's telling all his stories. Oh, his stories about going on gambling junkets to Las Vegas, into Haiti. And there's something, he doesn't come right out and say it, but it's something shady about it. Like maybe all of these Italian guys flying in a plane to Vegas together. It wasn't just a bunch of guys going on a trip, but like a bunch of Sicilian guys going, if you know what I mean. I don't know. There's something a little bit shady in that. And but it was really nice. As my dad was talking about how he every day he prays the Magnificat. He prays his Magnificat prayers in the morning. He prays it in the evening. He watches the Mass from Alabama.
EWTN.
Yeah, he just calls it the Mass in Alabama. And I'm going to send him some money because they ask for money. And I think it's really important what they do. So I'm going to send him some money. Okay, Dad, you send money to Mother Angelica. And so he prays. And then he says he's got this long list of all the people he prays for. Because every time you see him, he'll tell you the story that when he was, I don't know, 60. No, he had his first heart attack when he was 39. All these friends came in. These nine guys came in to visit him. And they were like, Dom, you're going to be okay. You know, don't worry about it. We're here for you. And he says, all nine of them are dead. All nine of them are gone. I'm still here and they're all gone. And so I'm here praying for them and they need it because that guy was a jerk and that guy was arrogant and that guy was awful and they all need my prayers. So I'm praying for them, which is, it's nice. I mean, my dad has a very earthy faith, very down to earth. You know, just, I mean, it's not a theological, it's not highfalutin theology. It's a very lived, practical, earthy faith. And so it's nice to see. He said he gets the Magnificat. He says Magnificid, but I don't think he means the Magnificid, which is the one for kids. I think he means the Magnificat. And he said he got a 2-year subscription. He could have got the 4-year subscription because it's even cheaper. But he's 88. He says, I'm 88, so I don't need a 4-year subscription, which is kind of funny. So that was nice. And so we talked to my dad and my mom, of course. And then they got into a long argument over Masons being Catholic and whether it's OK, because my dad was a Mason for many years and he's not really all that involved now. And there's this whole long discussion about technically Catholics are not supposed to be Masons, but that has to do with the Scottish Rite Masonry and all this other stuff like that. We kind of talked about it with my dad and we kind of settled in a place where he's not actively a Mason now. So I'm not sure it matters all that much in the grand scheme of things, but they got in this long debate about it, which they are, because they're in their 80s, they trod the same ground 3 times. They made the same circles of arguments, not realizing they made the same arguments 3 times. But it was fun. And then we ended with Star Wars. My mom turned on the TV. We didn't turn on the TV till the very end.
That's
big. My mom has a tendency to turn the TV on just to have background noise. But we didn't turn the TV on until the end of our visit. And Star Wars was on in 4K on their big TV. My brother's job requires him to, he installs big, expensive TVs, and so he has a very nice TV in his house. And it was Star Wars in 4K on the big screen.
What's 4K?
It's better than HD. It's super high resolution. Okay, so our TV is a 1080, so it's 1,080 pixels per line across horizontally. The monitor in front of you, the 27-inch screen in front of you, is essentially like a 4K monitor. It's 4,000 dots across, okay, give or take, 4,096. And so it's super high resolution.
All right.
So their TV is super high resolution. Now, of course, Star Wars was filmed, so it's not digital, but it looked really good on that TV. And so the kids were like, Star Wars, you know, of course. So and my dad had never seen Star Wars.
He's never seen Star Wars.
So I'm explaining to him. So who are these guys? Well, Dad, look at them. They're the space Nazis. Oh, OK. It was just like in that thing I read online. Those are the space Nazis. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, now I see it. And who's that guy? He's a Jedi. They're like magic knights. Oh, I got it. Oh, look at Harrison Ford. He's really young there. You know, so
very young.
Yes. Who's the ape? That's a Wookiee. It's like a sort of a Sasquatch bear man. Okay.
He kind of looks like an ape.
The closed captioning was on. They closed captioned Chewbacca.
Oh, did they? They translate it?
Arr.
Oh, no, but they didn't translate.
They didn't translate. No. It just said ARRRGH. AARRRGH.
Okay, that's kind of funny.
It was funny. They did not do, I don't remember if they did R2D2 beep, boop, beep, but that would have been funny too. So, yeah. So
we had a good visit.
We had a good visit. It was nice. It was nice to see my mom. And I got to fix her phone. Oh, my gosh. My mom has an iPhone, and she's constantly doing something to it that's breaking it, like locking the SIM up and creating all kinds of havoc. So I was able to lock it down a lot more this time by putting my hands on it and removing apps from the screen and hiding them so that she can't find them, hopefully. And we'll see how that goes. So the only other thing that we did was I finished building my Saturn V Lego model yesterday. That was really cool. As I've mentioned before, I've decided that building Lego models, like the big, more complicated ones, is akin to model building from the plastic things that they used to do back in the 80s and that such.
Does it make you feel better if you have a justification for it?
Yes, I'm not a child sitting on his floor building fictional space planes. I'm building models.
Well, what would be wrong with it building?
Well, nothing, I guess. But it makes me feel like I'm an adult as opposed to, and justifies the cost of buying this thing.
Uh-huh.
It is massive. I mean, it's sitting on the shelf behind me, and it is more than 3 feet long. It's more than 3 feet long. It's huge. And very complex. It was fun. It was a lot of little pieces, and the kids, they help me by sorting the pieces. I don't let them put the pieces together because this is my Lego set. They get their own Lego sets. This is my Lego set. And Anthony was dying to play with it when I was done. He wanted to take it apart and look at it. And so we'll see. So it was a lot of fun. So let's talk about what we've been reading or watching. So because we didn't make anything all that interesting this week or anything new that we haven't made before. So we'll kind of skip the food part. Hopefully we'll have something next week. But let's talk about what we've been reading or watching. I finished reading the latest Dresden Files novel, Battleground, by Jim Butcher.
Which means you're now caught up.
I'm now caught up, except for the short stories, which are on his website. And now you can finally talk to me about it.
I know. I've been dying.
Like last night you came in as I was, she's like, are you done yet? Are you done yet? I'm like, I'm in this scene. I'm at this point. She's like, oh, finally, you got past all the important stuff. All right. How about this? There was one of the things that continues to impress me about Jim Butcher, the author of this series, is that there are no sacred cows. He is willing to blow up any character, blow up every situation, make life as difficult for himself as an author as he needs to. You know, he doesn't take the easy road. He, like, the situation that they were in this book, the battle of the battleground, was so far gone. Like, there was such a moment of such despair of how could they possibly ever win,
right,
at this, that like you just like you get to that point with the characters where you're like, wow, how can they ever possibly get themselves out of this situation? And then he comes up with a plausible, meaningful way that they do. So I really love that part about these series of books that Butcher is willing to take his characters to the depths and to the heights and
everywhere in between.
And everywhere in between. It's really wild. I also really like that we talked about this before, the metaphysics of religion in this world. It's a complicated situation because the Norse gods and the Greek gods exist in a way.
Right.
They exist.
Not in a way. They
exist. But what are they? They have godlike powers, but they're not God, obviously. And they acknowledge that God exists. Our God, the Christian triune God, exists and is active in the world through his Knights of the Cross and angels in the church. Now, the theology is not accurate, because if the theology was accurate, there would be no suspense because God wins and, you know, that sort of stuff. But the metaphysics are such that God exists and somehow has created all these other creatures themselves. And it's a fascinating it's the best I've seen a specifically non-Catholic author do incorporating Christian topics and themes intimately into the story.
Right.
Yeah. So really good. I'm fascinated to see where they go with it. There are a bunch of loose ends that he can bring together for the next story, bunch of stories. So, now I'm disappointed. Has he said when the next book is coming?
I don't know.
I've been avoiding there's some interviews that he's done that are on YouTube.
I have friends who are very much into checking the news frequently. I basically just sort of rely on them to trickle things down, but sometimes it doesn't happen. Yeah. I don't know.
See, I'm the obsessive, when is the next book coming out? Put it on the list. I don't want to miss it when it comes out.
I don't think it's been announced yet.
Okay. That's annoying. Because a lot of the other series that I read, a year in advance, by the time the current book is out, when the next one's coming.
Right.
I just like to know. I do have some catching up to do in some of my other series. So, anything else to say about Battleground and Peace Talks? That we can talk about without spoiling it for people who might not have read it yet?
I feel like, I need to read them again before I can even...
You only just read them 3 months ago.
I know. Okay. No, I mean reread, because the first read through I was reading kind of fast, okay, what happens next? But then there's that sort of okay, now how does all this fit together? Because I'm not sure I have a good mental map of exactly what just happened.
So this is the difference. You and your sister and some others, the book comes out, you've read it in 24 hours.
Yeah.
Essentially. And it's how do you know what, then you have to go back and reread it to know what happened. I take a week or two and now I can integrate it as I go.
The
pop culture references are just they're so awesome. I just have to stop and laugh out loud at times. It doesn't spoil it, where at one point Harry is standing on a bridge, literally standing on a bridge, facing the enemy, rushing at him. And he stamps his wizard staff down and says, "You shall not pass." And I had to stop and guffaw at that.
It was a great Gandalf moment.
Yes. And in the book, he knows it's a Gandalf moment. He's like, he did it. He knows he did it on purpose. Because I'm a wizard. Of course I have to do that here. That sort of thing. Just it's so great. It's self-aware.
Right.
It's one of the things. I mean, it's sort of one of the things that makes Ready Player One so good. Is it? It's the pop culture reference, the things that grounds it in a world we know and connects. We connect with it that way. The Star Wars references, the Indiana Jones stuff, the
Harry Potter reference.
Oh, there was a Harry Potter reference, which is funny. You're a wizard, Harry.
Although my favorite Harry Potter reference is in a different book, where there's some people who come who want to throw down with him, but they're very much they watched Harry Potter or read the books too many times, and they're just kind of cartoon cut out.
They have wannabes power, but they have very little power. To other people it would be impressive, but they're just kind of, as in Harry Potter parlance, squibs.
Yeah, and he sort of mocks them using Harry Potter references, yes. Which was pretty funny.
Yep, yeah. So that's Battleground. Again, I recommend it. It's good. There's violence.
Yeah.
But there's nothing too graphic or profane in it.
Yeah, the series as a whole has.
There's some books have more than others, but these particular books were pretty fine and pretty okay. So I'm glad you finally got me to read them, and I'm looking forward to more. So you are finishing up a book as well.
I got within like three pages last night, three pages of the end of Death Comes for the Archbishop. I mean, like, he's on his deathbed.
Death is coming.
Death is coming. And I just could not keep my eyes open. And I finally, like, I have to get up and go to church in the morning. I've got to close this book and put it down. And I haven't had a chance today to sit down and read. So it's still waiting for me, like, three pages left. But again, really, really loving the book. It's good. It's a classic of American literature. And it's based fairly closely on the actual life of the first Archbishop of Santa Fe.
Yes.
She changes the name and she changes some details and stuff, but like it describes him building this cathedral, and that's actually what she describes is the cathedral in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And this is a part of U.S. history that we didn't really cover extensively in school. We didn't really talk very much about the annexation of the Southwest. Like, oh, yeah, by the way, we had this war and we got the Southwest. But that wasn't a war that we ever really studied or talked about in school. And so I feel like this part of my U.S. history is lacking. But also in terms of Catholic history, like, this is an important part of Catholicism in the United States. And so the book is a great introduction to that milieu.
It's interesting because the American Catholic History Podcast has done several episodes about various figures in that area in that time period, although not Archbishop Lammy yet, which is the first Archbishop of Santa Fe. But it is interesting to hear about this stuff, like, because you're right, like, and you grew up in Texas where it was even closer for you. But like here in New England, we never like we hear about the Alamo and that sort of stuff, but we really don't hear about that history of that area of New Mexico and Arizona and how all that became part of the United States.
Right. And, you know, never mind the
faith aspect.
Right. The funny thing is, I went to Catholic school even, but the textbooks we used were not at that time particularly Catholic. I think we just used whatever, like the history books were being used in the public schools, really.
I know it sounds self-serving, but American Catholic History Podcast is really great for this sort of thing. To really, you know, there are lots of Catholic history books that tell the history of the Catholic Church, in general, worldwide, 2,000 years. But to really dig into American Catholic history, the history of the Catholic Church in the United States, there's so much there, way more than I ever thought, way beyond Elizabeth Ann Seton, you know, and Francis Xavier and
Francis Cabrini.
Cabrini. Well, her middle name, Francis Xavier Cabrini.
Right. But not Francis.
Not Francis Xavier. Francis Cabrini. And all of that, you know, there's so much more than Catherine Drexel and all that. It's amazing. The stories of the people, I almost love more the stories of people I'd never heard of.
Right.
It's so great. And I hope more and more people discover it, because it would be great for more and more kids to hear these episodes too, this podcast, the stories. So I'm glad that Death Comes from the Archbishop is a good book. I'm glad that you're enjoying it. So, as far as things we watched, I've been watching this Netflix sitcom, which is kind of an interesting concept. But it's a sitcom format on Netflix called The Crew, starring Kevin James from King of Queens days, who is a very active Catholic. He's friends with Scott Hahn. In fact, Scott has done retreats for Kevin and his friends. I remember seeing that recently. But it's called The Crew, and it's about Kevin James in it is a NASCAR crew chief.
Okay.
So there's a whole lot of NASCAR references. And it's a middle of the road, lower tier, racing team. So they're not all that successful, but right. they're okay. And they've been around many years, and the longtime owner, the old school owner, is retiring and handing over the team to his daughter, his younger daughter, who has spent years working in Silicon Valley startups. So classic culture clash story. And it's funny. I like it. It's funnier than Kevin James's most recent sitcom that he did, which was on network TV. It's interesting having it on streaming. I mean, it could air on network TV. There's nothing, you know, unsuitable in it. Like, there's no language or sex or anything like that. But it feels slightly different without having commercial breaks.
Okay.
That's one of the structurally there is, it's still got the three act structure, or I think it's three acts, in a half hour or 40 minute sitcom, but it still got the structure, but it doesn't feel as disjointed as you get with commercial breaks in it. So that part is interesting. But as far as I think it's funny. It's I like NASCAR, so I get a lot of the jokes. Some of the NASCAR drivers show up in it in a few episodes. There's a lot of reference to some of the sponsors and that sort of stuff. So, and you know, you see the races are part of it. So I like it. I thought it was pretty funny. I mean, it's like high entertainment, but it was a nice diversion. I hope they make more of it another season. And then the only other thing new I watched this week was season 2 of For All Mankind on Apple TV Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And excuse me, I'm going to clear my throat. So this is an alt history show that posits what would have happened if the Russians had landed on the moon first in 1969. How would history have developed differently? And in this envisioning, the Cold War moved into space, and space became much more important, and much space exploration much more accelerated. So in the second season, they're in the 80s. So the first season was the, you know, 60s, late 60s, and then the 70s. This season is in the 80s. Next season is going to be in the 90s. So it'll be interesting to see how it continues to diverge.
Right.
We had a great discussion at dinner time, actually, about how in this show they're able to explore some of the concepts that NASA came up with for rockets that never got developed, but if they'd had more funding, they could have. And one was called the Sea Dragon, which was this giant rocket. It would have been the largest rocket ever built on Earth. The Saturn V could fit inside this rocket with room to spare, like several Saturn V's. And it would be launched from the ocean, floated out to sea, ballast would lift it vertical, and then it would launch from inside, under the water, in the water. It was pretty fun. They show it on the TV show, and so I showed the kids the clip from the TV show of it launching. It was pretty impressive. It's fun. My brother, I recommended my brother Bernie, and he watched the first season. He said, yep, you're right. It's good.
Cool.
So that's what we've been watching. So let's talk about today is the Feast of the Transfiguration, the second Sunday of Lent. And as I was mentioning before Mass today, it occurred to me that last year, the last Sunday we got to go to Mass before everything got canceled for the lockdown was the second Sunday of Lent. Now, obviously, Lent started later, so it was in mid-March instead of the end of February. But the Feast of Transfiguration was the last Sunday we sat in church last year.
I did not remember that specifically, but
at least I knew it was the second Sunday of Lent. But yeah, now it turns out it was the Transfiguration is always the second Sunday of Lent,
which I also didn't know.
Yeah. So, you wanted to talk about you thought that Mother Sophia of Mount St. Mary's Abbey had a really good reflection on the readings this week.
She did.
She's the one we often refer to. She is a Trappistine convent of cloistered nuns in the Massachusetts who sell amazing candy to support themselves, the TrappistineQualityCandy.com. So check it out because Easter's coming. But she always has really great reflections. And so what was it about this one that you really liked?
Okay, so one of the things she points out is that today's first reading is the sacrifice of Abraham. And she points out that, in fact, on Transfiguration Sunday, we get various accounts of the Transfiguration from the various Gospels, of course. And it's always paired with a reading about Abraham. So this year we got the sacrifice of Abraham, and other years we get like other Abraham stories. And she's like, that's kind of curious. Like, why are we getting Abraham on the Feast of the Transfiguration?
Because he doesn't show up on the mountain.
Right. Abraham is not on the mountain. It's Elijah and Moses who are there. Abraham is not there, even though the story of Abraham's sacrifice is a moment at which Abraham encounters God on top of a mountain. So there's sort of that going for it. But she kind of talks about like how for us, we Christians, you know, living the Christian life, don't have the experience of the transfiguration like Peter and James and John do. For us, life is much more like Abraham's experience of faith, which is hope and patient waiting, where Abraham is given all these promises by God over and over again, but he doesn't start to see the fulfillment of those promises until he's an old, old man. Like, as St. Paul points out, he's almost on the point of death. He's like given up. And then God finally gives Abraham the child of the promise, Isaac, this beautiful laughter that God gives him. Abraham and Sarah actually like literally fall down laughing when they're told that they're going to have a child. And then they name the baby Laughter. Isaac means laughter. So anyway, we are like Abraham, waiting and wondering when God is going to fulfill the promise. And then having finally given Abraham the son, the promised son, God asks Abraham to take him up to the mountain and sacrifice him. And Abraham does not argue, doesn't complain, doesn't grumble. In fact, we don't really get any of the details about what Abraham is thinking or feeling. Instead, what we get is Abraham is a very detailed description of Abraham going to the mountain. We get all the things he packs. We get the journey, and he gets to the top of the mountain and he pulls out the knife and he's about to sacrifice his only beloved, treasured son of the promise. And God says, no, that's not what I want. And then.
Well, it's what God says is essentially, and I think this is why it's Feast of Transfiguration, is no, Abraham, don't sacrifice your son. I will sacrifice mine.
Right. As so Mother Sophia, this is the part I wanted to read. Abraham had never seen the face of Christ and did not know any better than the disciples, or any of us for that matter, what rising from the dead meant. But he did see Isaac, the impossible gift of God, in flesh and blood before him, his hundredfold. And he did believe, hoping beyond hope, that the author of life would never revoke his gift. So Abraham believes that God can raise Isaac from the dead, not knowing what that means, but just knowing that if God promised him, that somehow God would make it right.
God promised him that your descendants would be like the stars in the sky or the sand of the beaches and all that. And if Isaac is his only son, then somehow God is going to make it possible for him to have children through Isaac.
Right. And she points out that Abraham can't let go of God. He can't. He is a man of faith and he holds fast to his belief that God will somehow keep his promise and make it right. She says, if we find that we cannot let go of God, no matter what is taken from us, we too have learned something of the Father's heart. We may ask ourselves if it's really Isaac who is sacrificed, our life, our hope, our future, or something more superficial, just a symbol of our fruitfulness, like God replaced Isaac with the ram, a symbol of Abraham's faithfulness. Like Abraham, our father, we have a fruitfulness beyond our imagining, which is hidden in Christ. The Father's heart is moved by one who does not withhold his beloved son, because he too will not withhold his beloved son, his all, from us. On the mountain, he shows us the face of his son, saying, here is my Isaac, my beautiful one, my beloved, whom I will give you as yours, who will lay down his life for you. For love of you, I will lose my Isaac to the depths of hell. By mutual consent, we will be lost to one another, we whose bond of love is stronger than any human bond, of which the love between a parent and a child, husband and wife, brother and sister, is only a shadow. On the third day, I will reach down to the depths into which he has fallen and grasp my son's hand. I will draw him out of death and all creation with him. Then with faces unveiled, you will see the glory of God shining on the face of Christ. So Christ transfigured on the mountain is the promise to Abraham fulfilled.
Right.
The substitution of sacrifice of Isaac. And it's interesting to point out that right before Christ takes them up to the mountain, he gives them a prophecy about his death.
Right.
So the transfiguration is very bound up in the idea that this is the moment, like when he gives them something to hold on to when he's taken away at the crucifixion. Like he first shows them his glory so that they will know that he has power to come back.
Even though they don't at first.
Well, they don't, but it's at the same time they kind of something to hold on to.
If they didn't believe, they wouldn't have ran to the tomb.
Right.
Right.
This is the moment which the moment at the tomb prefigures the moment at the tomb, the glory.
In Peter's depth of despair on that night, after denying Christ three times, after Christ being nailed to the cross, Peter's depth on Holy Saturday, this is what he could hold on to, is the memory of the transfiguration. That is the faith in God in that moment was what would carry him through.
Right.
In some sense, Peter was Abraham on Holy Saturday in the Triduum. He was, you know, I don't understand how or why, but you promised. And I have to hold on to that. You know, it was Judas who lost faith and despaired. But Peter, even in the denial, he had faith. He still had faith. Because if he didn't have faith, he wouldn't have stuck around. And he wouldn't have been the one to run to the tomb and wouldn't have believed so quickly. He believed, you know, it's the Lord. So because he'd seen him on the mountaintop. And I love in this gospel how Peter just gets so effusive. He's like, oh, it's so good we're here. Oh, I want to do something. Let's build tents. One for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. You can live in the tent. We can all stay here forever. This is awesome. And Jesus is like, and it says, he hardly knew what to say. They were so terrified. And I'd have to look at the word terrified there, the context of it. Because it almost feels like terrified, scared, awestruck, like terrified in the wonder, terrified of something so awesome that I can't even comprehend it. You know, that sort of terrified. I kind of feel like that's what the context is. That's how it comes across.
Right.
But Jesus doesn't rebuke Peter here. He doesn't say, no, Peter. It's the Father or the Spirit speaking from the voice. You know, the God, the Father says, this is my beloved son. Listen to him. Could you imagine what Peter, James, and John did at that moment, hearing the voice of God from the cloud? You know, Moses says, I recognize that voice. And Elijah, because the Father spoke to Elijah, too, didn't he?
Right. That's another interesting thought, is that in seeing Moses and Elijah, there is also that hint of what resurrection means, what life with God after death means, because here are Moses and Elijah.
They're not dead.
They're not dead. They're talking to Jesus. They're having a conversation.
Right.
We don't get to hear what they say, but they're there.
Can you imagine what the conversation was? Elijah got taken up into heaven. He was assumed into heaven at the end of his life. But Moses died.
Although there's some tradition that says that he didn't.
That's true. That's possible that he didn't. That he also was assumed into heaven. I think that's true. I think I'd have to go look that up. But in any case, it is interesting, you know, that three people for whom, you know, resurrection in a sense or assumption. At least two of them were assumption. Jesus ascended into heaven. There's a big difference between assumption and ascension. One is by your own power, and the others are brought up, being brought into heaven. But yeah, I mean, theologians have for two millennia tried to figure out what is the significance of Elijah and Moses being there with Jesus. And I mean, the obvious one is the fulfillment of the covenant. That Jesus fulfills the covenants that have been laid out. You know, there are others who aren't there. We don't see Abraham. We don't see Noah. We don't see David or Solomon. You know, there are others, other covenants that God made with his people that aren't represented here. So, but Elijah and Moses were, and because they were prophets, it's interesting. There's more than we could talk about here, but I do like this connection that Mother Sophia makes with Abraham and the sacrifice of Isaac and the transfiguration on the mountain. Jesus, in a sense, is the ram that's caught in the thicket, who's substituted. Right. But also, yeah, I like that it's this, what did she say? The superficial, it's a symbol of our fruitfulness. That is sacrificed. I don't know. I have to think about that more. Anyway, I think that should about do it. I'll put a link to Mother Sophia's thoughts, her reflection on this in the show notes for you to check out if you'd like. So we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Savannah W., Timothy H., Patrick M., Bob M., and Joe B. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. Now's a great time to become a StarQuest patron, because thanks to a generous gift from a StarQuest supporter, when you start a new Patreon monthly pledge at sqpn.com/give, the first 3 months will be matched by an equal amount from our donor to support all our shows, including this one, making your gift go even further. And we're more than halfway to our goal of $2,000 in new monthly pledges, so won't you help us close the gap? If you've been thinking of becoming a StarQuest patron, now is the time. Visit sqpn.com/give today. So that's it from us. What did you think of our discussion? If you have any feedback, you can let us know by commenting at sqpn.com/bets or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And of course, like I said, links from our discussion will be in the show notes. We've been getting some great comments from folks. I didn't get a chance to read them in this episode, but keep those comments coming. We love to hear from you. We'll be reading some in the future. Remember to like Raising the Bets on the StarQuest Facebook page and retweet us on Twitter at SQPN. Until next time, I'm Don Bethanelli.
And I'm Melanie Bethanelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.